This is Around the Rim with LaChyna Robinson.
Hello, basketball fans. Welcome into another edition of your favorite women's basketball podcast, Around the Rim. I am your producer and co-host, Tarika Foster-Brasby, and you may have noticed I'm solo in this open today. Okay, LaChyna has today off. She's getting some much-needed rest after tirelessly working over the last few weeks. But don't worry, guys, because I have found three of the best guests to help me out in her absence. So you don't want to turn this off. Now, if you missed the virtual WNBA draft, you may want to find some highlights because it was not only a historic event, very different from the norm due to the restrictions from the global pandemic, but it was a very emotional time. I mean, it was an amazing event. Around the Rim had wall-to-wall coverage from the beginning of the day to the end. So if you aren't following us on social media, you need to be at Around the Rim Pod on Twitter. You can also follow me at @SheKnowsSports_. You can follow LaChyna at LaChyna Robinson. But it was just an amazing event to see these women's dreams come true, having their names called to play at the next level. And today, what we wanted to do was take an opportunity to talk with one of the focal points that helps any player reach their dreams, and that's their coaches. So today's show, we're featuring three of the most prolific coaches in the game of women's basketball. First, you're going to hear Rutgers head coach C. Vivian Stringer, 49 seasons leading championship program. She was first at Cheney, then in Iowa, and now at Rutgers. She's the first men's or women's coach to take three programs to the Final Four. She's a former Naismith Coach of the Year, a Naismith Hall of Famer. She's coached Cappy Pondexter, Essence Carson, Kia Vaughn, just to name a few. She who can tell you what it really takes to build the championship program. And then we're also going to have USA basketball head coach and South Carolina head coach Dawn Staley. She's the current 2020 Naismith Coach of the Year. She led the Gamecocks to the best record in the NCAA this season. They ended the season at number one and on top all the polls. And she had the pleasure of hearing two of her players go back to back in the top 10 in the WNBA draft. Makia Herbert-Harrigan and Ty Harris, they helped to lead the Gamecocks this year. Dawn has taken this team to a championship, completely turned this team around, given South Carolina the audience backing. We know that her accolades are from here to the end of the world. Hall of Famer, champion. Many saw South Carolina winning it all this year, and I guess we'll never know, but we are certainly excited to speak with her. And to lead this discussion is none other than my colleague and women's basketball savant, Carolyn Peck, the first African-American head coach to lead a women's program to a national championship with Purdue in 1999. She was also AP Coach of the Year that year, and LaChyna and I just knew that there was no one better to drive this conversation than her. So we're excited. Get excited, fans. Very quickly, it is also a bittersweet moment in women's basketball as we learn that Coach Muffet McGraw is stepping down at Notre Dame. She's retiring after 30 plus years. We've had the pleasure of talking to Coach McGraw on our show. Her dedication to coaching the game, period, to women's empowerment, is just certainly one that we all admire and respect. Her players can attest to that, and she has so many that have made marks across this game. Muffet is actually one of only five coaches that have had at least 930 wins, 9 Final Four appearances, multiple national championships. She's a Hall of Famer, and she's just an all-around example of leadership. So we want to wish her the best in her retirement. We're certainly going to miss her, but we're just as excited to see Neil Ivey take over the reins at Notre Dame. We had her on our show, beginning of the basketball season, and LaChyna and I pressed her. You know, we were very excited and very happy that she had taken a position with the Memphis Grizzlies as an assistant coach, but we were wondering, you know, when is your head coaching time going to come? When are we going to get to see you, you know, leading a program? We felt that she deserved it. So many people felt that she deserved it. And so now we're getting our wish. So congrats to you, Neil. We look forward to seeing you on the Notre Dame sidelines in the top spot. We certainly wish you so much success that we know that you're going to have. So I'm going to shut up now so that we can get into our interviews. But before I do, I just want to make sure that you guys are tuning in to the Last Dance series. The series started on Sunday and it will be continuing this Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN. It's a behind the scenes look at the 90s Chicago Bulls dynasty. And our coverage of The Last Dance is brought to you by State Farm. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Our coverage is also brought to you by AT&T. So without further ado, here is Carolyn Peck, C. Vivian Stringer, and Dawn Staley.
I have the privilege to be here with two Hall of Fame coaches. Not only are they in the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame, but the Naismith Hall of Fame. And Coach Stringer has won over 1,000 games, and Dawn Staley is approaching 500. She could catch Coach Stringer. Who knows? But it's a privilege to be with these two coaches because it's almost like bookends. For me, it's the first African-American woman I saw coach in the NCAA tournament, and now we have the most recent African-American woman who won a national championship. So,
and the one that started it all. Come on now, Carolyn, don't do that to us.
Yeah, that's right. She know better than that.
Well, look, I have had great examples from Coach Stringer, and Coach Staley is off and running. But I feel like in order to appreciate basketball and women's basketball, you got to know the history. And Coach Stringer, you coached in the first national championship game leading Cheney State. You played against Louisiana Tech. And Coach, in seeing where the game is today, what were some of the obstacles that you had to overcome in order to put such a great product on the floor?
Well, you know what, when you think about it, there were a lot. I mean, the game, everything has changed so much. First of all, we took the opportunity because, as you know, some of the schools went with, the AIEW, which was the women's organization. And, I think that in that situation, it was, Rutgers was in at, the Rutgers, with Teresa Grintz, as well as Jody Conrad at Texas, right? And then it was, on our side, you know, with the, NCAAs, it was, Louisiana Tech, it was, Maryland, it was Tennessee, and Cheney. And one of the reasons why we definitely went, the direction of the NCAAs is because we didn't have to, pay, for the transportation and all that. But, yeah, it was the first one, and the obstacles. Oh, I don't know if you're talking about personal obstacles. As you know, we didn't have any money. I remember that when we were, practicing, I think one of the teams that we played, prior to making it was, Auburn, and it was Joe Champy was there, and we didn't have enough balls. We had, three or four leather balls, and the rest of them were rubber. So, you know, we're talking about bare necessities, but we knew that it doesn't really matter as long as we had, you know, the one ball. And I remember the girl came in the office and asked me, she said, "Well, Coach, where's your balls so we can, you know, warm up?" And I was saying, "Okay, you can have, you know, the three leather balls, and then you can work with the other balls, because they were rubber. So we didn't have anything. We didn't have a weightlifting program or whatever, which is why whenever I'm in a situation where we don't have a lot, I don't really get worked up about it. You know, it's like, okay, you know, been there, done that. We've done so much with so little. And long story short is honestly, you can start to name everything, you know, no bus, you know, nothing, you know, it was crazy. In fact, we had a couple cars that drove us down because I think the first one was at, the Scope, which was in, Old Dominion. We didn't have, anything. So the best thing I can tell you is that I remember that, our athletic director got some money from the NCAA. I was shocked. And I remember him coming, knocking on the door and coming into my room and having this big pile of money. He stood up, "Hey man, we struck it rich." You know, I don't know. It's probably enough, you know, enough to pay for some pancakes or whatever. But long story short, we didn't have anything. But we had what was most important, and that is a desire to compete and the belief that we were as good as anybody that was there. And that was as simple as that.
Well, and Don, you went to 3 Final Fours as a player, even to the national championship game. And then as a coach, you went on and won the national championship in 2017. What was it that you took from your experience as a player that allowed you or helped you in building a championship program?
Well, I thought Debbie Ryan did a great job at coaching us up and getting us to the Final Four. When you're there for the first time, you're literally happy to be there. So, but when you get there second and third time and you don't win, you're like, you know, either it's not in the cards or, you know, what's the separator? So when I was able to go to the first Final Four as a coach, I went into that Final Four saying, we're happy to be here, but we're not going to act like we're happy to be here. We're going to act like it's a business trip. I'm going to keep our same routine as we had done all season long, so we won't, you know, fall into the pitfall that we did as a team like Virginia. And then we were fortunate enough to get back. And again, you want to stay true to who you have been, because everybody's excited. They're 4, you know, last teams to play last weekend of the college basketball season. Everybody's happy to be there, but the team that can make it more the norm, their normal self, is a team that's probably going to win it and not get ahead of the pressure that's being applied playing on the biggest stage of college basketball season.
Now, the 3 of us, 3 African-American women that have coached to the highest degree, all 3 of us have been pursued for jobs.
Right.
There are a lot of coaches out there nowadays that are busy hunting that next job. So what, and I'll start with you, Coach Stringer, do you feel like were the attributes or the things that you demonstrated that made these programs pursue you to go from Cheney to Iowa and Iowa to Rutgers?
No, let me just say this. I never applied for a position ever. And so to that extent, I felt that my work, because I wasn't interested in going anywhere, quite frankly. I love Cheney State. You know, it was a predominantly black school, and, it was my pride and joy. You know, we took great pride in overcoming the odds. It didn't matter that we didn't have money or, you know, that didn't have, you know, a bus to take us, you know, here or there. Or the great meals that everybody else tended to have. You know, it was like we played with an attitude, and our mindset was, you know, we had a chip on our shoulder, quite frankly, that we didn't have anything didn't matter. You know, here we were playing one of the schools, you know, was Tennessee, you know, with whatever, however many, 20,000 students. And Cheney was 6,000 students, or at the time, probably 4,000 students. Long story short, we didn't have a lot, but what is most important is that we believed in ourselves, and I think that the players believed in us as a coaching staff. And, you know, when you win, people are going to come after you anyway. So I had an opportunity to coach some of the teams that were from the USA basketball, as well as, the opportunity to take it to the next level. And really, we just didn't have it. And I didn't count on friends, because I didn't have, what you call friends. Like, we have the Women of Color, organization, which allows, us to communicate with each other, which we didn't have that before. You know, it was myself and, I think Coach Washington that was at Kansas, and that was it. And probably by the time we went to the NCAAs, I don't know if Coach Washington was still coaching at the time. So we didn't have, you know, the friendships that are now established, and that makes a world of difference. You know, it just does. It's a lonely position to be in, but, you know, I think as long as you focus, and what I did is I focused on, my team and my family.
And Don, how about you?
I've been very fortunate in that, I got into coaching when someone saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. I just didn't really see myself coaching basketball. And it wasn't that I didn't have great coaches, as examples. I just didn't see myself being or supervising 18 to 22 year olds. And I was, when I got into coach, I was 29 years old when I took the job at Temple. But here's what I did know. I knew I was drawn to challenges. And I also knew that I love basketball, and whatever the challenges of turning a program around or the challenges of coaching, whatever was thrown at me, I knew I had the ability, the stamina, the mental stamina to overcome it. And then when I started coaching at Temple, I mean, I really liked it. Like, you know, the relationships that I built with our players were something special, and I did not anticipate that part of it. I only saw turning the program around and winning, just winning, being successful. I didn't see really or understand what really went into it. And when you dive into coaching, you really find out what makes people successful. And a lot of times, yes, you work hard. Yes, you that part of it is the known. The unknown is who you're doing it with, who you're doing it for. And when those things are lined up, you tend to have some success. And I've had great people around me, great, great people that have allowed me to grow in this game and allow me to be my authentic self. Like, I don't ever think I've been anybody other than myself. Maybe probably a year or two here at South Carolina when the formula that I used to help Temple become successful didn't work. And then I'm like, oh, that's not working because these players aren't receiving it the same way that I was giving it back at Temple. So either you're going to lose a whole team as far as in transferring wasn't that prevalent back then, but it could have been. We weren't successful. I wasn't listening enough. I wasn't. And it took somebody like Lisa Boyer to say, hey, you know what? You lost them. They're not listening to you anymore. Look at their faces. You know, and to hear that made me really upset. And I probably used a couple of choice words. But in using those choice words, she made me think. I went home at night thinking, you know, gosh, she might be right. You know, and Coach, I mean, Boyer's been in the business for a long time. So she had much more experience at coaching than I did. And once I got past my emotional outburst and got into, you know, the nitty gritty of why we coach, we coach to be dream merchants. We coach to serve. We coach to win as well. But until you're able to get those things lined up and knowing your why, won't get to the end result. So I've been very fortunate and I'm much like Coach Stringer. You know, I've never applied for a job either. And that's a place in which very few people have been. And I will go a step further to say probably not any other black coaches were able to just write their own, you know, their own ticket, to go wherever they wanted to go. Carolyn, I'd like to hear if you, you know, if you apply for any jobs or your success took you to wherever you needed to go, to WNBA and other places, or your, you know, where you are now.
I had not applied for jobs until after I got fired at Florida. And after then, I reached out for some jobs that obviously I didn't get. You know, it's at times it can be frustrating because after you've proven that you can win and you've had some missteps, or you didn't win enough, and mm-hmm. not taking into consideration all the other things that you did, it's harder to get back in. I mean, that's, you know, but being with ESPN and having the opportunity to watch and see how many, so many other coaches do things and learn kind of thing has been a wealth of knowledge. And Coach Stringer, I remember in Orlando, the black coaches would get together for a convention. Mm-hmm. And when I walked into the hotel, you were sitting at a table with George Ravlin, John Chaney, you had Coach Washington, and mm-hmm. you and Coach Freeman. And mm-hmm. I had just become the restricted earnings coach at Tennessee, making $16,000. And you mm-hmm. pointed out to me, you are the first African-American woman that Pat Summitt has ever hired. And I hadn't even thought about it at the time. But mm-hmm. from that point on, I felt a responsibility that I got to be good at my job
mm-hmm. yeah.
so that others would have the opportunity. How much pressure do you feel being an African-American woman that you have to be successful? I want to ask you, Coach Stringer, first, and then Don, you next.
Well, let me say this. I know that I'm driven, much like Don said, I'm driven, and I'm driven to competition at the highest level. So, it really wasn't a strain, you know, but I really felt that, with the teams, in the way that I had them presented before everybody, because I knew that we were always going to be on stage and people are going to make a comment about anything and everything, you know, our hair. You know, the way that we play the game, you know, to a great extent, I did not allow us to run and do the things that our team was very, very capable of. We could have blown people out, but I didn't, because the first thing that everybody was saying is, okay, then this is just a wild group that just, you know, runs up and down the floor and shoots. We were very calculated. And we wanted to go away from stereotypes. It was the way that we presented ourselves. And much like Don said, that every time that we played, we wanted to present ourselves as professionals. And that's where me as a African American coach knew that, everything that we did was looked upon. And I just wanted to make our people to understand that there's no question about it. I knew that we were one of those teams that that has been around for a long time. And so everything, we wouldn't be accepting anything other than let's just play the game straight up. And that was it. But I did know that this was an opportunity for our players to go on to other levels. And at the end of the day, I knew that and did appreciate and respected the fact that I'm grateful to be in a position where, you know, I am. I didn't feel the pressure of winning. And I say that because I had supreme confidence in myself. And then when I went to Iowa, we got, you know, a number of players that probably I wouldn't have gotten had I been at Cheney. So, you know, that goes with as you're at Florida, you know, or Dawn's at South Carolina, whatever. I mean, it's about the players. But I know that I would have done, I just wanted to coach. Yes, I did feel and do feel a sense of responsibility with everything that I do.
I don't necessarily feel pressure. I do feel like a responsibility, a necessity for other black coaches to be an example, be a beacon of hope, to allow them to get an opportunity. Because I know if I do well, somebody's going to get a chance because of the success that we've had. Somebody, you know, that's a black coach will get an opportunity because of our success. And that responsibility was passed on to myself. Do I think we need to hold our kids to a higher standard? Yes, I do think that in coaches, you know, it's right on. If I allowed our players to do some of this stuff or say some of the stuff on social media or act out a certain way, it comes right back to me. We're unruly, we're this, we're that. Well, sometimes kids are just being kids. Kids are doing what they do in their own households. Mm-hmm. So if they come to South Carolina, they know they have to do things a certain way. Mm-hmm. Again, success has a certain look. It has a certain sound. It has a certain feel. And mostly, I would say this for black coaches, we have to be disciplinarians to that, to whatever it is, right. Your core value, your principle. I feel like, you know, I grew up in a household where I had a strict mother, you know, mm-hmm. who ran her household a certain way. And I know what came out of it because of who I am as a coach today. I lend that. We hear it all the time. Like, we talk to our players, they're like, you know, their friends are saying, we don't want to come to South Carolina, let me do that. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right, because, you know, one, we're trying to prep you for the rest of your lives. Like, you're whether you got a big black body or a small black body or short big black body, or, you know, you got girth to your black body, you're going to be a black young person, old adult, and you're not going to be seen like everybody else. So you got to learn how to navigate and create habits that will transcend race, so people can see you for who you are. If they got a heart to do that, if they mm-hmm. don't, then you got to be sharp. You got to be mm-hmm. sharp. You got to have, you know, you have no shortcomings that seep out. Everybody has shortcomings, but you don't want them to seep out in places in which will deter you from getting to go. And I honestly, you know, when I got into coaching, I didn't really look at myself, oh, I'm add to the black coach number. I didn't look at it like that. But being around this game, as long as I've been around the game, people make you look at yourself and look at the color of your skin. And that's so unfair to the game. It's totally unfair, because, you know, we picked up this basketball. I picked up a basketball in the projects in North Philly. You know, my white colleague or counterpart picked up a ball wherever they picked up a ball, whether it's inner city, whether it's rural. You know, we innocently picked up this basketball, and mm-hmm. we got good at it. And we got so good at it that we got good at teaching it. Now we become coaches. So now we have to be stewards of our game, and you know, and now stewards of hoping that we give other black athletes an opportunity to coach at this level, because it's few and far between. So, yes, mm-hmm. I do feel a sense of responsibility to do it the right way. Not because I've been given this opportunity, because I still, although my mother's been gone for 3 years, I still want to do her proud.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Dawn. Both of you coaches have done a tremendous job in recruiting. But in one of the last interviews I did with you, I asked you about, you recruited the number one recruiting class, and you talked about some key elements that you look for when you recruit. What are some of those elements that you look at?
Well, here's the first, and this has evolved over my 20-year career as a coach. When I first got into coaching, I wanted the most talented kid that we could get. and sometimes that didn't work out, but as I got more and more into this profession, you figure out what works and what doesn't work. And what works 20 years ago may not work 10 years into your season. And surely 19 to 20 years in your season, you evolve as a coach and figure out what you want to tolerate and what you don't want to tolerate. And I just feel like nowadays, we look at the relationship that a recruit has with their parents. And that's mm-hmm. an indicator of the type of respect that you're going to garner from that young lady. Because if they don't respect their parents and they talk to their parents any kind of way, if they're posting on social media any kind of way, that is a true mark of their character. So I gotta think long and hard whether or not I want to bring somebody in our program that disrespects their parents. I won't anymore. my heart went out to young people that were like that, mm-hmm. because I feel like if we can help them change, just change a little bit of who they are and how they lash out, they can go back in their neighborhoods and change a mass of people. But sometimes that takes too long, longer than 4 years for somebody to change kind of the core of who they are and the defense mechanisms that they use to lash out at people. So, you know, parents are key in my whole recruiting young people nowadays. And we got some great, I'm fortunate enough to have some great parents, but we also, once they get here, we continue that relationship with parents because they are a part of the village and we don't know everything. I don't know, a kid comes in at 18 or 19 years old or sometimes 17, you know, that parent has been with them for 17 years. They know a lot of things and how to deal with their child, their daughter, than I do. So sometimes I need a little bit of help. So I check in. I check in a couple of times a month just to make sure they're okay and that their daughter is okay. And I think that's worked out. That's an element and dynamic that's worked out well for us over the past few years
and
at
Coach
South Carolina.
Stringer, you've been doing it for 49 years. Wealth of knowledge. You know, what do you look for in your recruiting of young women?
Well, I mean, much like Dawn said, you know, because if a player doesn't respect their parents, we want hardworking. You know, there was a time when I remember one parent, you know, said to me, you know, like, the only person that my daughter will listen to is you. I look for us to establish a good relationship, a trusting relationship. It's a two-way street. And yet, when it all said and done, I want to know that their parents are involved, because I will tell the players right from the beginning that, if the person isn't doing what they need to do, then I'm going to reach out to the parents. And I tell them that in front of the players so that they, know that, you know, if I have a problem, I'm going to reach out to mom or dad, because this is the way it goes. You know, we know that Rutgers is a tough school academically, and we expect you to go to classes. We expect you to go to the training, the tutoring, and the whole thing. But yeah, it's about respecting us, respecting the parents. But they can't possibly respect us if they don't respect their moms and dads and coaches. We're watching carefully, you know, how they come off the floor, how they're relating to each person. I've walked out of some homes because the player would say, well, you know, like, hey, I know all about you. And, you know, I'm not worried about the team. I'm not worried about, you know, how we get along, because they knew that they were good, but that wasn't enough. You know, you have to have a level of respect. And like Dawn said, I remember Coach Cheney, and there was a girl that from Washington, D.C. that I was crazy about. And Coach asked me several questions, you know, like, does she do this? Does she do that? And long story short is, you know, I always believed that I could change a person, but at the end of the day, I can't. And he said, you know, you always think that you're in the position to change the world, but at the end of the day, you know, that's not the case. That can't be the case. And quite frankly, today, you know, administrators are holding us much more accountable to everything, you know, whether it's academics, whether it's issues that a person might have on campus. So long story short is there's much more that we are responsible for, and we can't accept any person just because we want to save them or they have a special talent. You know, yeah, we can teach passing all day, but you know, there are times when a person could have taken a pass or should have made a pass and they didn't. You know, if we can work with team spirit and have an eagerness to work together and to be honestly happy that we are doing what we need to do to win, it's going to be key. I am looking for a leadership, and really truthfully, a person that has integrity, because when it's all said and done, when they have integrity and they're willing to give of themselves and not stress, you know, because we wouldn't recruit them if they weren't talented in the first place. And when you have assistants that are reaching out to the parents, letting them know that, you know, that you're accountable and we are accountable to you, then we have a great working relationship. You don't have to worry about kids with people getting into the ears of your players, because that is really what's happening quite a bit, especially with this opportunity to go into the to the portal. So there's a lot more distractions now, and until we can get to that point where that they're there. In fact, I talked to my president today, and he was just saying, you know, I said, well, how do you feel about this, you know, this transfer portal and whole thing? And I was just saying that, you know, too often I think that the athletic directors have abdicated their responsibility, and the coaches. I mean, I can't figure out why the things are situated as they are, except that, oh, these are the rules and this is what we're working with. But so you've got to work with people that you want to believe are honest and that have integrity. And if you get those people together and continue to nurture them, then, you know, then you're going to be okay.
A few more minutes, and I just wanted to ask this question because of the COVID-19. How has that changed, or how have you been able to go about the recruiting with there no evaluation period to go out and find new talent? So I start with you, Don. What are you guys doing to broaden your recruiting base or hone in on what you're doing on the recruiting front?
Well, I mean, obviously this is for the juniors, this is the source of what we use to talk to them and their parents. When I talk to recruits, I said the onus is now on them. I mean, we can reach out to and do the same things that we normally do, which is call, FaceTime. But now they have to do a little more due diligence in reaching out to us and maybe reaching out to the current roster, because we may not be able to bring them on campus for an official visit or unofficial visit. So now we're working with our video person to do virtual campus tours and locker room tours and office tours. So we're in that production of producing that. And it's different, but it lends more opportunity to talk, because your day is more confined to home and you're sitting around either doing Zooms or you got your phone and you're just like, you got more time on your hands, which I think is really important. I think we also need to look at how many people jump in that portal after what we've been through this particular year. I hope somebody searches. Mm-hmm. And maybe the communication is a lot better. Maybe you're getting to know. Maybe you're taking your time and really getting to know who a coach is and who a recruit is. So I think it's an awful thing, COVID-19 and what it's done to our world. But I also think we have a better appreciation for relationships and communicating. Real communication, not just superficial, how you doing, how's your day. It's like, well, what are you thinking about? You know, where are you right now in this process? Because you can't come to our campus. You won't be able to come to our campus until August, November, August, October, maybe. Mm-hmm. I know June, July, you won't be able to. So the onus is put back on the student-athlete, the prospective student-athlete.
Yeah. You know, I think that the players, quite frankly, like that better. I remember because we've been getting on the phone each week talking with all of our players. And it was interesting because one of the players just yesterday said, well, you know, I like this. I like talking to you. And Don's right, you know, because it gives us a chance. Oh, so how's mom? You know, how's dad? How's your sister? You know, how's the family doing? And, you know, you find out a lot of things. Mm-hmm. You find out a lot of things during this particular time. And so, you know, and then for us to get together and find ways that we can you know, do the web chat and whatever. I'm learning a lot in terms of, you know, communicating, in the way that we've got to do it now. They're taking their responsibilities to address the academics in the proper way. And I think that it's good. In fact, I tell you what, I'm even, feeling like, okay, there's a bunch of things that I've wanted to get done, you know, in, on the coaching side of it. And so now I can, you know, send things, to them, the coaches, and, communicate, you know, we can get on the phone and talk about the things that we would have normally done. But in this situation, we've got plenty of time to talk about it and address the big issues that we're having. And no, they're not going to see the campus. They're not going to see a lot of things. But in a way, you know, you heard, I think the other day there was a football that they were given an example with the football draft, and they were saying that, you know, actually they can do just as well, if they don't, you know, bother to go to the combines and whatever. I don't know about that, but I just know that we missed the opportunity to visit during the summer. But yes, it is much more of a responsibility on their part. I always felt, quite frankly, that if you consider the academics, if you consider the reputation, or even ask, you know, former players, you know, about who this person is, that, you know, you almost feel like I mean it in a derogatory way, but in a way it is. It's like almost like being a prostitute. You know, you sit up on stage and you say, well, hey, we can do this, we can do that. You know, this is what, you know, you need to do. I think that quite, you know, like if you can present yourself with the, credentials that you have and your belief in your program and, you know, and the reputation of the school and the likes of the things that should count, then the person should make their mind up and be comfortable with that. And of course, yeah, I know this a lot more, you know, because they need to meet your players and the whole doggone thing. But at the end of the day, honestly, I think that there's going to be a lot to be said about what's going on here right now. I think that now you have a chance to really talk and ask, you know, and find out what they're thinking about this or that or the other. So the exchange is great. And I'm looking forward to it, and I'm hoping that we keep some element of this going in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've enjoyed talking to the two of you, and really want to thank you for your time. And I hope we can get these three together. Let's do this again.
Thank you.
All right, y'all.
Hey, good luck to you, and please take care of yourselves, please.
Thanks. Yes. Okay. Be safe.
All right, basketball fans, I certainly hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. We want to thank Dawn, Carolyn, and Coach Stringer for making some time for us today. Please, please, please continue to support Around the Rim. Again, follow us on social media. You can follow our handle at Around the Rim Pod. I'm at @SheKnowsSports_. LaChina is at LaChina Robinson, hashtag Around the Rim. Email us on our Gmail at Around the Rim Podcast. Whatever you are feeling or wanting to hear, wanting to know, we take all ideas, comments, everything. Please just let us know. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back.
Thank you for listening to Around the Rim. Check out more podcasts from ESPN on the ESPN app.